ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Text Number 4. Antapravishya Gangayam Ambuja Vanarajini Chikridato Yuvati Bir Gajaviva Karenubhi Anta Pravishya Gangayam Ambuja Vanarajini Chikridato Yuvati Bur. Sorry. Chikridato Yuvati Bir Gajaviva Karenubi. Please chant. Ladies, please. Anyone else? Anyone else here? Karanubi Antaha within Pravishya entering Gangayam the Ganges known as Mandakini Ambuja of lotus flowers Vanarajini where there was a congested forest Chikridatu, the two of them used to enjoy. Yuvatibi, in the company of young, of young girls. Gajau, two elephants, Iva, just like Karenu Bhi with female elephants. Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. Please repeat, within the waters of the Mandakini Ganges, which were crowded with gardens of lotus flowers, the two sons of Kuvera would enjoy young girls, just like two male elephants enjoying in the water with female elephants. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. People generally go to the Ganges to be purified of the effects of sinful life. But here is an example of how foolish persons Here is an example of how foolish persons enter the Ganges to become involved in sinful life. It is not that everyone becomes purified by entering the Ganges. Everything, spiritual and material, depends on one's mental condition. Omagyanati mirandasya gananjaha chalakaya chakshur unmiritam yena tasmai shri uruve namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto His lotus feet. So this is a very interesting and very important point, that our obtaining or gaining spiritual benefit from an otherwise very spiritual place or spiritual person or spiritual thing depends very much upon our attitude towards it. Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here, everything spiritual and material depends on one's mental condition. So it's not that everyone who goes into the Ganges necessarily becomes purified. Those who go in with the wrong attitude, wrong understanding, not following the principles or the teachings of Lord Sri Krishna, but in fact opposing them, violating them, ignoring them, disregarding them, not only do they not get benefit, but they get curses. In other words, when we come to a holy place, we're expected to be respectful, reverential, respectful. We're expected to have feelings of sacred appreciation for this. When Prabhupada came, walked in, threw herself on the ground because he was a sacred person. A person who could, by his mere glance, if it's a favorable glance, loving glance, he could transform us instantly into loving servants of the Supreme Lord. And if he could glance at us with some anger, being displeased, it could make us shake and shudder because of the possible consequences that could occur. We should not disturb, we should not upset, we should not in any way hurt the spiritual master. So there's a very good example. If a devotee has the proper attitude, the proper understanding, the proper love, the proper reverence, the proper awe, then he gains much, much benefit, not only, as I was mentioning, from the spiritual master, but from the Supreme Lord, who sees everything. And if a person disregards this, doesn't care about this, thinks he doesn't need to do this because he's so advanced, he's so spiritual, and he's so glorifiable, well then not only does he not get any benefits, but he gets basically cursed. He will find difficulty, troubles and trials and tribulations and problems besetting him. So it's our business to please Krishna, to please the spiritual master. An interesting thing. Excuse me, I'm a little bit hoarse this morning, so pardon me while I take a pause for a drink. So this reminds me of a very interesting time going back into, I think it was around the late 60s. I wasn't here, but I heard this story about the devotees when they went to Vrindavan, they went to Radhakund. And they entered into the waters of Radhakund and they began splashing and joking, making noise, acting as if this is just another pool. You just go there and you just have fun, getting on each other's shoulders, water fights and this kind of a thing. And when Srila Prabhupada saw this, he was not only astonished, if not shocked, but he immediately issued an order. No one goes into Radhakund. If you want to put your hand in it, touch your head, touch your tail, fine. Do not swim in Radhakund. You do not have the proper attitude, the proper understanding. This is the kund, this is the pool where Srimati Radharani bathed, and you have the audacity to water fight here? What do you expect to get from her? Blessings? That will be your next life. You'll be fighting in the water as a shark or as a whale. So, from that point on, nobody went into Radhakund because they didn't have the proper respect, the proper honor, the proper reverence. You have to approach someone as high and mighty as Srimati Radharani. This was her kund. This is where she bathed. This is where Krishna used to come and meet with her. We can't just think of this as the corner pool, you know, where everybody goes in the summertime. It's a place of reverence. It's a place to pray at. It's a place to beg the mercy of Srimati Radharani. I'm so fallen, so wretched, so worthless and useless. Please purify my heart. I come to this kund so that you will give me your guidance. You'll give me your help. You'll give me your grace. Otherwise, what hope do I have? Krishna may look to the other side at me, knowing how sinful I am. But you, my dear divine mother, have a soft heart. Mothers are very kind to their children. I'm your child. Please tell Krishna to give me a little blessing. You can do it. He just turns a deaf ear to me. Please. And when we pray in this manner of helplessness, and if not even hopelessness, she acts. So from that time on, devotees did not go into the water and they would just touch it with their hands, touch it to their head. So when I went to Radhakund in 1989, I was with Mahanidhi Swami. And we sat down and I said, well, why don't I read the Krishna book? He said, I said, I have the tape recording. We can listen to Krishna stories while we're looking at Radhakund. He said, no, I want you read. Okay, so I was reading for a while. After I finished the reading, I decided to go down to touch the water. So, and then I did that, and I came back. He said, well, why didn't you go in? I says, well, you know, there's a directive by Srila Prabhupada that we shouldn't go in. He said, shouldn't go in, yes, if you have the wrong attitude. And everybody in those days had the wrong attitude. They were taking everything for granted, taking it casually, as just another place. He said, if you have the proper attitude of respect and reverence, that you feel that you're not worthy of the place, but you're coming here because you know it is a blessed place to gain spiritual advancement, that you feel unworthy of it, and you're begging to become worthy of it, well, in that case, he said, you can go in. Anyway, I still didn't go in because I still felt I wasn't worthy of it. But the point was this, is that whatever we do, in regard or in relation to Krishna, has to be done with respect and reverence. For example, we have our Bhagavatam. When we're preparing our Bhagavatam lessons, or we're just reading the Bhagavatam, you can take the book off the shelf and just open it and start reading it. You know, you can start reading whatever is there. By the way, if somebody has accidentally or intentionally taken my glasses, please return them. Or if you haven't and they just got lost, if somebody has magnifiers, that would be helpful, because I'm going to do a bit of reading today. I will need them. So, you take the book and you just take it here and you just start reading. And then you finish and then you close it and that's it. Wrong. Why wrong? This is Krishna. Krishna, Bhagavat. Non-different from Krishna. When we approach Krishna and all his glorious, wonderful, amazing, awesome words here, we have to have some reverence towards it. So the book should be handled gently. It should be looked at with reverence. Ah, Krishna is giving me the opportunity to read his words. I am one in many billions of people who will read his words today. How fortunate I am. How gracious he is. I, who have committed so many sins and wrongs and evils throughout my life, yet he ignores it. He disregards it. He forgives me. He forgets about it and allows me to read his amazing, amazing words. Ah, thank you, Krishna. Then you open the book up and you hold it gently, affectionately, lovingly. Not as any ordinary book as you might take off a shelf, like a novel or some philosophy book or some book on, you know, how to do this or how to do that. But this is the means, it's the way, it's the path back home, back to Godhead. It is the most powerful, the most important, the most glorious book that there ever can be, the Bhagavatam. That's why Srila Prabhupada spent so much time making sure that he could get as much of it down on paper for us. Get up every morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. Remember, he was late in his years. Getting up, recording, looking at the purports of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which, by the way, I believe it's his appearance day today. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ki. Yeah. And we also have Raghunath Das Goswami ki. Yeah. There are a few other ones which escape my memory. Oh, what do we have? Some glasses? Magnifier? Fine. Krishna provides. Thank you. You just have to ask him. If it's a good thing, he gets it for you. If it's a bad thing, forget about it. So, anyway, this is our book. This is God, non-different. Okay? So, the next time we pick up our Bhagavatam, pick it up and say, thank you, Krishna, for allowing me to read what you have spoken. There's so much benefit, so much blessing, so much benediction, so much kindness and sweetness coming out of the Bhagavatam, and I am getting the opportunity. But it doesn't stop there, because when we read it, or after we read it, and we imbibe the teachings, and we feel joyful and happy and peaceful, our next business is to, if possible, whenever, share it. So if we have this mentality of wanting to share it, this is what Prabhupada came here for. Not just that he should give it to a small handful of devotees. He expected all of us to share it wherever and whenever we can. That was his desire. That was his wish. And so we had nice Sankirtan. We still have nice Sankirtan. Devotees going out and giving out books. People getting these books, touching the books, and being blessed and benefited. Opening the book, if they read one page, or if they read the whole book, so much benefit. There is no hope for this world unless people begin to get the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita, and get a basic understanding of these books. Look at what is happening. I don't think everybody here follows the current events. They're pretty bad, let me say. Things are not going up with our new president. All we have is conflicts, protests, screaming and shouting, murders in places. It's horrible. So the only salvation, the only secession from all this is people have to become peaceful within. And when they're peaceful within, then they can discuss, then they can get into different aspects of different subjects. So anyway, getting back to the main point that I was making, is that we need to, whether it's the Bhagavatam, whether we walk on the altar, just don't walk on, you know, like you're walking down the street. It's a sacred place. It's a privilege. It's an opportunity. It's a gift that we don't deserve. And having that wonderful gift, we can only be thankful for the mercy that we're being given to get so close to the Supreme Lord of the universe. He's allowing us. He doesn't have to. There's so many people, millions, who will never get to be so close, even standing right up close to the altar. This is a great, great gift that we receive. And if we treasure it, if we cherish it, if we hold it dear and close to our heart and be thankful, Krishna blesses us unlimitedly. This is all He wants. Because then we speak properly. We act properly. We pray properly. And we draw closer and closer in love to the Supreme Lord and His consort. He wants us all back home, back to Godhead. But we have to try to be qualified. We can never be qualified, actually. It is Krishna who gives us. Prabhupada, our spiritual master, gives us our qualification. As Prabhupada said, I am your good karma. This is exact words. I am your good karma. So don't think it's by your own endeavor. And that's a fact. Without the company of the spiritual master, there's no hope that we can ever even get to first base in spiritual life. So Prabhupada laid it all down in his books, in his lectures, in his songs. He was such a perfect, great, glorious example. And that's why we have so many singers, we have writers, we have beautiful dressers of the deity. This altar is so exquisite. I've been around, you know, all over the country seeing the different altars. And the only one that comes close to this, although it used to be ahead of us, is the Dallas Temple. But this is now, in my opinion, the greatest. Since they've did the gold leaf all over the asana, it's absolutely exquisite. You could just stay here all day looking at it. And the deities, they make the altar, you know, look beautiful, and the altar makes the deity. They're both working competitively. And so when you look at this, especially look how everything's been dressed. Unfortunately, we don't have a town crier here who cries out the name of the person who is dressing the deities. They deserve all kudos, praise, glorification. They deserve it. Look what they're doing. And Krishna is not kicking them off the altar. He's accepting their loving service. So we should all be very, very, when we go, when the deity doors open, I know in my own case, the first thing I do is I pray to Krishna, please bless those incredible devotees who are dressing you so gorgeously that I don't want to take my eyes off you. I don't know who they are. Of course, Rabindranath told me if I go in the back, I can find the names of them some there, if I have my glasses. So, so therefore, they're so wonderful, so glorious service. I feel, I cringe literally in shame that I'm not doing any service when I see what's going on there. As I'm a bum, that's all I am. Look at that, and look when I'm nothing. All I do is yak, 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 talk, 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 nothing else. But they're doing something. People come in, wow, amazing. Who's done this? I thank you all again and again and again, really, from the bottom and the top and the middle of my heart. So, so that's the attitude that Srila Prabhupada is talking that we should have, whether it's deities, prasadam. It's not just something you take and you shove into your mouth, chunk, 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 chump, chump, chump. This is Krishna. So we take it and again, a mood of reverence. Srila Prabhupada used to eat in silence. Why? So that he could truly taste Krishna in the prasadam. When you have all these noises going on, it's difficult. Then there were times when Srila Prabhupada would like to hear the Krishna book read while he would take prasadam, which is the same. It's non-different. And whether you're taking the prasadam and feeling the presence of Krishna that way, or feeling the presence of Krishna through the ears. But the important thing is Krishna is the center of our activity, of our thought, of our feelings, while we are accepting the prasadam. Now, sometimes I see the devotees, because I serve out, the devotees, they sit in a little circle and they have conversations. Yeah, that's wonderful. If they're talking about Krishna, they're talking about our books, talking about the lectures, talking about the deities, talking about the Sankirtan, that's all non-different from Krishna. So that's good. It's a nice camaraderie that I see. I miss it because I'm serving out and I see they're all sitting in a circle and they're enjoying. That usually, the talking takes place usually after Rabindranath reads from the Krishna book. Very rarely do you come to a temple where there's somebody every day reading Krishna book. What devotion! He gives us Mahaprasadam. What devotion! Every day, as long as he's here, Rabindranath's got his hand out here, here, here. I pray to him and beg to him, please, when you get back there, would you please put in a good word for me? I need it. You've got it. No question about it. The deities are being worshipped every day beautifully. This has been going on since time I came here in 1976. Everything's still going on, but even better, because this altar is so gorgeous now. So I would like to talk about one other point in this regard, and that is something that was mentioned yesterday in Drudha Karma's nice class. He gave us a nice summary of Narada Muni's incarnation in a previous kalpa and also in this kalpa. And he gave us some very nice details showing just this point, how how Narada Muni, after he had been cursed to become the son of a Sudrani, a Sudra lady, that he had this perfect attitude of how to serve the four Bhaktivedanta sages who came in during the rainy season to stay there, to live there. And Narada Muni's mother, he was only 5 years old, Narada Muni's mother, her job, she was assigned to taking care of them, making sure their laundry was taken care of, making sure that their rooms were clean, that they were receiving prasadam, the things that they would need. And she delegated some of her duties to her son, Narada Muni. Sorry. So Narada Muni, he's quite intelligent. He would go and he would serve out the prasadam and he would stand by, you know, probably with his palms together, and he would listen to these Bhaktivedantas discussing what they normally discussed, which was Krishna and the philosophy of Krishna. And then after they finished their meal, Narada Muni, he asked them for permission. May I please take your holy remnants? He didn't just take them and shove them into his mouth. He considered them holy. He considered the remnants super holy. And he begged if they would allow him, not just taking it for granted, he's such a great servant, he's such a wonderful devotee. He didn't even think like that. He was thinking, I'm just a little Sudra kid, and I'm trying to get up and trying to advance. This is before he became the great Narada Muni. So they said, sure, take it. They could see that he wanted to make advancement. So he took the prasadam, and in taking the prasadam, he became more spiritually enlivened, enlightened, uplifted. And everything that the holy men were talking about became clearer and clearer and clearer. And he could understand. They could understand the way that we'd be talking about meditation, how to meditate, how to focus the attention on the mantra, how to focus the attention on Krishna within. He listened to everything very clearly and very carefully. And then finally, the rainy season ended, and the holy men, they left, and Narada Muni's mother, she died from a snake bite. And I'd like to read from my own book, Mystical Stories from the Bhagavatam, just that section. And by the way, it comes strictly from our Bhagavatam. I did not take it from any other book or anything like that. So if I can get all this arranged. I don't know if this is going to work. This is a magnifying glass? It's blurred. No good. Anybody got some glasses? These would be some glasses over there. No? No more glasses? I don't know if I can read this without the glasses, but I'll try my best. Huh? You got some? Anybody? They have to magnify it. Let's see, that might work. I'm sorry, I did bring my glasses, by the way. You got to fill up, let's see which ones are better. No, these are blurred. Let me try yours. Thank you. Krishna, please. Oh, these are bifocals. I think I might be able to make out some of the print here. Okay, so let's begin. As a result of serving the holy men, so I'm just going to be giving some more details of what was given yesterday. As a result of serving the holy men and receiving their blessings, Narada suddenly became very spiritually inclined. He was self-controlled and uninterested in childish sports. Never ill-behaved, he spoke only that which was necessary. One day, while he was taking away the renunciant's leftover foods, prasadam, or edibles, that had been offered to and blessed by God, he asked if he could eat them. Understanding his purpose, they gladly consented, and Narada consumed and relished all their remnants. Just from this holy contact, all the karmic punishments that Narada would normally have received from the sins he had committed in his past lives were instantly eradicated. So we learned yesterday please don't call the ambulance yet. So we heard yesterday that he was a real womanizer, and he was very, you know, he was like a playboy. And there was a lot of sin which was accumulated during that. This is previous. In fact, he was cursed to become a Shudra as a result of that. I think he was cursed by the Prajapatis. Is that correct, Duda? Yeah. I think it was the Prajapatis or Lord Brahma. Because he's the first Prajapati. So, anyway... So his past sins were eradicated immediately. Thus his heart became purified, and he became strongly attracted to transcendental living. He therefore eagerly listened to the sages describing the attractive activities of Lord Krishna. And with each telling, he became increasingly enrapt, so much so that his taste for knowing about Krishna's divine exploits escalated daily. This resulted in his realizing that he was not his material body or mind, but was an eternal spiritual soul. As Narada continued serving the sages, he developed strong faith in them. They in turn instructed him in confidential spiritual knowledge. He learned where souls originally come from, why they are in this world, what causes them to suffer, and how they may become free from all misery. He also discovered that he had an eternal relationship with God. And even though it had become dormant, he could actually revive it by the process of bhakti yoga or devotional service to him. He further learned that he could eventually enter the divine world where God dwells and acts, and personally meet and serve him there. To Narada, there was no higher goal than this. At the end of the rainy and autumn season, seasons, the holy men and Narada, the holy men bid Narada goodbye and wandered off to other places. Now that Narada's mother was dead, what would he do? Who would attend to him? Remember, he's 5 years old. Considering this, he felt quite helpless. Though he was sad from being separated from his mother, he knew that she had merely gone to another realm and that the Lord would take good care of her. He also understood that her leaving him while he was so young, was God's special mercy. For now he would have to
depend solely on the Lord to guide and help him. Since he had full faith in God, he left the Brahmin's house and walked onto the road. Completely alone and determined to be an itinerant devotee, as a wandering monk, Parvachakacharya. Just like the sages who had initiated him, he now headed north. Nutta had passed through many thriving cities, towns, villages, valleys, vegetable and animal farms, flower and nursery gardens, and natural forests. After a while, he not only felt physical and mental exhaustion, but also intense hunger and thirst. However, he soon came upon a lake, and after bathing in it and drinking its water, he felt relieved and refreshed. Continuing on, Narada discovered an uninhabited forest where he sat down under the shade of a banyan tree and began to meditate. There, as the sages had taught him, he focused his attention on the Supersoul in his heart. Gazing resolutely at the Lord's lotus-like feet, his heart became filled with transcendental love, and tears flowed from his eyes. Narada instantly saw Lord Krishna in his heart, and this filled him with indescribable happiness. Each and every part of his body became thrilled and enlivened with ecstasy. In fact, Narada became so blissful that he could no longer see the Lord, and yet he wanted to continue seeing him. For the vision gave him total satisfaction. Perturbed by the loss, Narada concentrated firmly on his heart and endeavored again and again to see the divine form. But hard as he tried, he could not succeed. This greatly frustrated and distressed him. Noting the child's grief, the Lord within suddenly, but gravely, said to him, "Narada, I'm sorry to say that you will not see me for the rest of your life."
What? Narada was taken aback.
"I'm sorry."
"But why?"
"Because you're still incomplete in devotional service."
"Incomplete?"
"Yes. However, the more service you perform, the purer your heart will become."
"But how come you let me see you today?"
"Just to increase your desire for me."
"Increase?"
"Yes. The more you remember me and hanker after me, the more you'll be freed from your worldly desires."
"And when I'm free from them, will I be able to see you then?"
"Yes, always and everywhere." Narada became hopeful. "By my mercy, you will never forget me." When the Lord stopped speaking, Narada felt relieved and grateful. He therefore offered him his obeisances. From that time on, Narada remembered and chanted the Lord's name and glories regularly, for he knew how immensely benefited those practices were. Thus he continued traveling all over the world, fully satisfied, humble, and content. At the end of his life, he was free from all materialistic desires and karma. The Lord then awarded him a transcendental body, which is eternally knowledgeable and blissful, and which enables one to see the Supreme Lord always. Many years later, when Lord Brahma's day ended after 4,320,000,000 years, the world was destroyed. At that time, Narada, along with Brahma, entered into the Supreme Lord's body and remained there in divine consciousness. At the end of Lord Brahma's night, 4,320,000,000 years, when Brahma awoke, he once more created the world. Then Narada appeared from Brahma's body. He appeared from Brahma's thigh, for those who don't know. He appeared from Brahma's body in the same transcendental form that he had when he had previously entered God's body. Since then, by the grace of Lord Vishnu, Narada travels everywhere without restriction. both in the material and spiritual worlds, performing devotional service for him. Wherever Nada travels, he always sings God's glories and plays devotional music on his veena. This stringed instrument is charged with transcendental sound and was given to him by Lord Krishna himself. As soon as Nada sings about the Lord's holy activities and plays a devotional melody, Lord Krishna, as if summoned, instantly appears in Nada's heart. Nada's message to everyone is, you can cross over the rough ocean of materialistic desires, anxieties, and miseries with the boat of constant conversation about the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. This gives you pure love of God and complete delight and fulfillment. Possessing these, you need nothing else. Thus, Narada not only achieved his spiritual goal of being able to see God always, but by his expert teaching and perfect example, he continues to instruct many other souls on how to do the same. And we know that he instructed Pallad Maharaj, he instructed Dhruva Maharaj, he instructed Mugari the hunter, and so many others. And so on this note, I thank you all very much for listening. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. All glories to Bhagavatam ki. All glories to the assembled devotees ki. Hare Krishna. No, I'm keeping them.
Get off.